Hello. Thank you for putting on your hiking boots and joining me for this session of the On the Right ADHD Trail. I'm Kathy Gett, owner of Get Focused. I am a certified ADHD life coach and a certified Sanity School for Parents trainer. This is my third time hosting this summit focusing on men and ADHD, and I couldn't be more excited to chat with each of these 15 incredible ADHD experts. You can find out more about me and my coaching practice at getfocused.com. That's getfocused.com. But before we bring on my guest, I'd like to thank our VIP Telesummit sponsor, Lori Dupar, owner and director of the International ADHD Coach Training Center, where they train ADHD coaches to be the change they wish to see in the world. Check them out at iactcenter.com, and you can enroll now for the January 2022 semester. But are you worried about how am I going to find the time to listen this weekend? Well, I have the solution for you. Simply upgrade to On the Right ADHD Trail Backpack. For only $85, you have extended digital access to all the recordings, a transcript of our audio interviews, and as a special bonus, you are in the drawing for a $100 gift certificate from REI. But enough talking, let's get started and meet our next presenter, Melissa Orlove. Melissa is founder of ADHDmarriage.com. She is a marriage consultant, a top expert in how ADHD affects relationships, and an award-winning author. She has been writing and speaking about the topic since 2007, researching it since 2005. She teaches couples, therapists, counselors and coaches about how ADHD impacts relationships and offers private counseling to couples who wish to improve their ADHD-impacted relationships. Her very popular couples seminar, By Phone, has helped many struggling couples turn their relationships around. Melissa blogs for Psychology Today and wrote the Your Relationships column for Attitude Magazine from 2008 to 2014. She is the author of The ADHD Effect on Marriage, very good book, and The Couple's Guide to Thriving with ADHD with Nancy Kohlenberger. Her presentation today is Rebuilding Trust. So is lying a part of your relationship? Are you eager to move past the lies to a more trusting partnership? Trust is an essential element to any good relationship. Yet many partners with ADHD tell me that when they are honest, their partners are so jaded from past experiences that they don't trust anymore. To the partner, every reason is an excuse, a way to avoid responsibility. In this presentation, Melissa will explore a more nuanced understanding of the ways that lying hurts you and your relationships. She will share the difference between a reason, an excuse, and a lie. You will learn how to approach situations better and convey honesty. Thank you for coming today, Melissa.
Well, I'm delighted to be talking to you.
Well, let's just get on to it. Why are you talking about trust today?
Well, because it is so easy to break down, and ADHD really contributes to that. And many couples, adult relationships did not know about the ADHD at the beginning of their relationship. The majority get diagnosed after they've been together for a while. And so there were all these things that were going on that didn't make sense that have an impact on trust. And so, you know, when adults with ADHD say, gee, my partner thinks that I'm just making excuses or whatever, that's related to the ADHD. And it fits right into what's called the trust equation, sort of how people think about trust and how easily it's broken. So it's important to talk about. It's sort of the core of a relationship.
Okay. Well, you talk about the mirror traits of ADHD. What exactly do you mean, and how do they help one appreciate this trait?
Well, so the mirror traits of ADHD is something actually that Ned Halliwell writes about, and that is that there are these positive traits of ADHD And then there are the sort of other side of those same traits. So, for example, distractibility is tightly linked with curiosity. And so those things are really something that can be used as you think about where your strengths are and how to think about putting together your trust. Yeah, I want to talk a little bit, if I can, about the kinds of things that erode trust and then the position that the person who is trying to rebuild that trust in particular is in. Because the trust is, so trust is eroded. You know, if you think of trust as, hey, you've got my back, right? I trust you because I know you've got my back. But then the person is inconsistent because of ADHD, or they have trouble following through on something, or they don't think through the promise that they're making and it doesn't happen. Pretty soon the other partner says, oh, you don't really have my back. And that's where the trust starts to erode. And a lot of it erodes around tasks, because there are many tasks in marriage, that, you know, ADHD can interfere with. And so then, until the ADHD is, addressed or managed or at least understood, the hurts keep happening, right? One of the reasons that trust is difficult to rebuild is because the stuff keeps coming at you. Your partner says, an ADHD partner would say to a non-ADHD partner, for example, well, okay, next time I'll do it better, fully meaning that. But unless the skill set is put into place to actually fulfill that, then it becomes another breach of trust, and that adds to the problem rather than helping it. So, so inconsistency is one of the big issues here. If I can, I want to continue a little bit with sort of what we do know about trust and how it fits in, if I could do that.
Absolutely. Go for
it. So John Gottman, who has a marriage research center that does some really terrific research into what makes a healthy marriage, did a lot of investigation into what are the elements of trust. And that his trust equation is very specific after he did all this research. The first part of it is transparency, and the second part of it is what he calls positive moral certainty. And let me talk a little bit about what each one of those is. Transparency is the opposite of lying and deceit, so it's keeping promises and being truthful. And positive moral certainty is knowing your partner is a moral and ethical person and that they're going to treat you with respect, integrity, kindness, good intentions, et cetera. So the ADHD contributes to sort of breakdowns in both of those, but the lying and deceit, the cover-ups that are related to feeling shame or embarrassment about not doing what you said you were going to do, or as one man told me at one point, he said, it's easier for me to just promise myself that I'm going to do better next time around and that I'll fix the problem. But how that comes across to the other partner is that the problem still happens, and lots of times the fix doesn't actually happen. It's more optimistic than realistic. So, So shame and inconsistency and issues really hit at the heart of what people expect in the trust equation.
Yes, I would definitely see that, shame and inconsistency.
So one of the things that I've done and is taken a look at Gottman's work and tried to put it in sync, essentially, with having ADHD. One of the things.
How do you go about that?
Well, I'm sorry, say it again.
How do you go about getting that altogether?
Well, I've worked with couples for a long time, and I've watched trust issues with couples, and so I have, in essence, added words to Gottman's work to address, to sort of adapt his work to ADHD. Okay. So the transparency side of things, it's still important not to be lying or deceiving your partner. And it's interesting, sometimes, I'm going to go on a little side thing here before I circle back, but I talked recently with a man who said that he had, that it really brought him up short when I started talking about lying and deceit, because he viewed his cover-ups as sort of self-survival, you know, his way of protecting himself from the anger that his partner might feel. And his partner, who was also on the call at the time, said, you know, the one thing I really, really want is I don't care whether you perform perfectly all the time. That isn't a big deal for me, really. I mean, I'd like to know that you're going to do some of the stuff that you say you want to do. But what I really care about is that you're honest with me. And that's what this is about. So that was a real turnaround for that particular couple, because the first partner was then able to say, wow, what I really need to be doing is working on being honest about this, and then simultaneously also being able to improve my dependability to an acceptable level where, you know, some good proportion of the time, if I say I'm going to do something, I do it, or if I know I'm not going to be able to do it, I bring it forward, right? That's the transparency part of it. So my transparency version is the opposite of lying and deceit and keeping promises to the best of one's ability, as well as being truthful, and then being very open about what's going on. So being able to go to your partner, creating a relationship between the two of you where you can say, I know I agreed to do this thing on Tuesday, but I'm actually not going to get to it by Tuesday. So it's going to be Thursday, and I just wanted to let you know. And being open and honest about it goes a long way towards rebuilding trust. You don't have to be performing perfectly, but being open and honest is the most important part of transparency.
Yeah, because if they don't tell them that they're going to, you know, have a change of their agreement and everything, they're going to feel guilty when they don't meet that. But if they've been open and told their partner, hey, you know, I just don't think it's going to happen, I can understand where it would be much more mutual understanding and everything.
Right. Right. And just like that couple, the other partner, what they really want above and beyond anything else is this ownership and honesty. That the deceit and the lying are the things that are the killers of trust in terms of the transparency part of it. Now, obviously, you also want to know that your partner is in that second grouping or second part of this equation, a moral and ethical person. And again, that transparency, the honesty, supports the idea that you're an ethical person. And so you're treating your partner with respect and with kindness and with good intentions. I do want to do this thing, but I can't get to it until Thursday, and here's why. And if you come over that again and again, and you just cannot manage to make the deadlines, then the next step is to say, why am I not making it? Is it I'm overpromising? Have I not looked at my schedule well enough? Do I not have the actual skill set that I need to be able to get this done? You know, what is it?
Right.
And those open conversations, as well as perhaps some good training and coaching, bring you to a place where your moral certainty, your respect, your integrity, your kindness is obvious. Right.
So when you work with your clients, are you doing ADHD training too, or are you just working with the couple's relationships issues and everything?
Well, so I only work with couples. I don't work with individuals. Okay. And my bias is when you have issues inside the couple, I think the strongest place for that work to happen is between both partners. You know, you can't make changes on your own. You can make, I mean, not to the relationship. You can make changes in your own attitude with an individual counselor, but I work with just the couples. So this idea of operating with openness about all positive and negative events that are happening around the ADHD is an important part of transparency that needs to be brought forward. And then there is another element, which is understanding ADHD. So this is one of the things that I do a lot of, is I have this seminar that I do, and I do a lot of teaching couples what ADHD looks like in their relationship, where it's entering the relationship, what you can do about it, et cetera. And that understanding of each person's place or responses, you know, it's not just the ADHD issues, but also often there are resentment and anxiety issues and stuff on the other side of the partnership as well, that have built up over the years. And you know, when you're trying to rebuild trust, that resentment and those that anxiety is a factor. Because if you're hyper anxious about whether your partner is going to do something, if you feel you have to oversee your partner all the time because they're not going to be completely honest with you about whether they're struggling, then it's harder to rebuild trust. You're really highly sensitized. So understanding what's going on in the relationship is also really, really important to rebuilding trust.
Okay. So you also say finding joy together is a huge part of rebuilding trust. And you say there's a science to this. What is
that? Well, there is. There's a lot of marriage research about how to rebuild joy. Arthur Aaron does a lot of this work, and you can go online, actually. It's sort of one of the fun things that you can do, which helps connect you again, he has a list of, I think it's 34 or 36 questions to rebuild connection. And, you know, and it's really fun. You can, like, go out on dates and do these things. And there's
Would you mind spelling his last name for us?
Aaron is A-R-O-N, actually.
Okay.
So, yeah, okay. Pretty straightforward. And it was in the New York Times. It was published at one point in the New York Times. You know, if you Google Arthur Aaron questions to connect or something, New York Times, it'll come right up. So that's kind of a fun thing to do. And doing things that are interesting and engaging are good ways to connect and to find joy as well. Things that are new to you, new and challenging, that also comes out of Arthur Aaron's research. And part of the reason why that's useful for the rebuilding of trust is that having these good experiences together, the kindness, the respect that, you know, if you're doing something new together, there are no known sort of territorial spots that anybody's defending or whatever, you're trying something adventurous. People will say they do very well on vacations when they get away from all of the yuck stuff of their everyday lives. And part of that is it gives you a sort of a positive buzz. And you had mentioned before about ADHD being an excuse or being thought of as an excuse by non-ADHD or more organized partners. And that's really common. And sometimes people do use it as an excuse. They say, well, I have ADHD, therefore I shouldn't be required to do that, or I shouldn't be asked to do that, or whatever. That's using it as an excuse. ADHD can be a reason that you've struggled with something in the past, or a reason that you don't wish to do something because it's not really in your sweet spot, and can be recognized as such. But it shouldn't be an excuse to continue to do bad stuff in the future. So if you struggle with something because it's really not in your skill set, you have some options. You can either delegate it to somebody else, or you can build the skill set that you're currently missing, or you can manage the ADHD, you know, do a treatment program for the ADHD, or you can say to your partner, I don't want to do that thing, but I'll do something equivalent that you don't want to do, and sort of trade things off. I mean, there are ways to do that, but to just continue along and say, oh, no, I've got ADD, therefore I shouldn't be held accountable, doesn't work well in a relationship. It is not part. It does not give you a good, strong sense in that positive moral certainty that, you know, you're going to be treated, that the partner's treating the other partner with respect or kindness or whatever. So it should not be an excuse for things to continue in the future. And that's really where you draw that line. And it's also where this is sort of all circling back. You asked about mirror traits earlier. The going out and finding joy, the not using ADHD as an excuse, looking for the positives in ADHD, all of this contributes to goodwill, to kindness, to respect, to growing respect. You know, the things that you fell in love with your partner with ADHD, typically are very positive, high energy, willingness to do new and interesting things, you know, an eagerness, curiosity about the world, those kinds of things are all related to having ADHD, and also often during the courtship to hyperfocus and you know, the thrill of courtship. But anyway, I'm rattling on here. What else should I be talking about with Russ?
Well, you were talking about the difference between a reason, an excuse, and a lie. Can you give us a little bit explanation on that?
So the reason is, you know, look, I've had ADHD in the past. I understand why something has happened in the past, but I'm going to commit to a different path because that's been hurtful. I'm going to commit to a different path in the future. And then a good effort to do so, whatever that looks like. And it doesn't mean that you flip a switch and automatically something happens. The lie, on the other hand, is when you say to yourself, you know what, I'm too embarrassed, or I feel too much shame, or this thing that I'm doing feels too good to me to want to give it up. And therefore, I'm going to disregard your needs and your desires, and do whatever the heck I feel like doing. I mean, the classic of this is an affair, but it can also be smaller around, you know, yes, I did X thing, when in fact you didn't do it, or you're just intending to do it, but you haven't yet done it, or whatever. And those lies really are that's the core of the fabric of loss of trust. And until the lies are gone, trust cannot be rebuilt. Just cannot be rebuilt. And it's hard because if you have ADHD and your habit that you developed even in childhood so you wouldn't get in trouble with your parents or with your teachers or whatever is to cover up, if you think like that partner that I was talking about, that's self-protection rather than lying, you're going to keep doing it. You have to identify it as, no, actually, this is deceit. And deceit means that your life is going to get worse. You know, it's a short term, I don't want to experience the shame or the embarrassment or whatever, therefore I will cover up. But the long term is the marriage falls apart or the partnership falls apart. And that's hard to think about when people with ADHD have what I call reward-focused brains. It's hard to think about longer-term hurt to the relationship when in the current moment it feels really bad to tell the truth and have your partner be upset by it. So part of figuring out how to get around that can be working with a professional who can create a safer relationship, who can help the other, the non-ADHD partner, or if it's a second ADHD partner, whoever the other partner is, understand their role in keeping communication open and safe for both partners. And that's really important.
So when you're talking about relationships and all that, you're also talking about, like, if you have a family and taking care of children and all that kind of stuff. It's not just the emotional part of it. Is that correct? Is that what we're saying? It's just like the lying, any kind of lying that goes on in your marriage or relationship?
Yeah. So I specifically work with couples, and that covers things like taking care of kids and family, other family relationships and things like that. I think the primary relationship is the one I'm most concerned about and work the most with. But you also, I mean, you know, lying to kids is no better. It's the kids can see through it and can see that that mom or dad didn't follow through the way they said they were going to. And kids are human beings as well. They are just as easily disappointed as an adult would be. I run into that a lot where one partner is very concerned because the kids have become disenchanted with doing anything with, it's often a father, because so unreliable.
Yeah.
And
he's
so
supposed to be there to take him somewhere, and he doesn't show. Yeah, like he's supposed to be there.
Yeah, he doesn't show up, or
he doesn't show up.
I'm taking you to the ice cream parlor, and then he gets caught up on a video game or something, and the kids don't get to go do the thing they thought they were going to do, and that feels horrible to them. You end up feeling like you're not important. When a partner is lying to you, or when they're not following through as you thought they were going to follow through, or as they promised to follow through, not only does the trust get crushed, but you feel irrelevant. Right. It's all about the person who's doing the lying or the not following through or whatever. And everybody else feels not important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, OK, you have this one thought about we all have ghosts in our past. How do they affect trust? I'm curious about this.
You're going to say that one again because I missed the important word. We all have what in our past?
Ghosts.
Oh, ghosts.
You said. Yeah.
OK. We do. So ghosts are these emotions that you get. So when you've struggled as a couple for a long time, you have interactions that become very highly sensitized for you. In the case of my husband and I, for example, he did not like it if I used a certain tone of voice, right? That was very traumatizing for him. So he is very sensitive to that. And if I use that tone of voice with him, he still, he gets the pit in the stomach kind of thing, and he gets all tense and he gets defensive and all of that. So that's a ghost. It's about your past, not about your present. And so ghosts do impact trust because sometimes somebody has made the changes that they need. They are transparent. They are not lying anymore. They are treating their partner with respect. And something comes up that's a trigger from the past that makes the partner go, So there you have to be able to recognize them and say, that's a ghost from the past. It doesn't actually reflect what's going on today. Let's set that ghost aside and recognize that that's not current and sort of move around it and move forward. So again, this transparency idea, being open and truthful and owning the things you have. Those ghosts are things that you have, right? They're emotions you feel. Owning them and being open and saying to your partner, that really doesn't feel good to me. Or that's bringing up a lot of old ghosts for me. Being able to say that really helps the relationship.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I was wondering what that was, ghosts in our past, but I understand now what you're saying. Well, we're getting close to the end of our interview, and I just wondered if you have any last thoughts that you would like to use to wrap it up. And we also have a gift for our listeners, if you'd like to tell us about that, too. So
for those people who are struggling with trust, the people with ADHD who are struggling with feeling like they're not trusted well enough or not, understand that you are in control of whether or not you can rebuild that trust. And a lot of it relies upon your being transparent, taking really holding a high bar in terms of being honest, asking for your partner's a willingness to listen to you. It also means optimizing treatment for ADHD so that you are as dependable as you can be, so that when you promise something, it's likely to happen. I have a free treatment guide on my homepage at ADHDmarriage.com that gives some ideas about how to optimize a treatment of adult ADHD. You're welcome to download it. As I said, it's free. So I think that there is much that can be done here and should be done because this is the foundation, the rock and base of all good relationships. My gift is about this trust equation. It is actually two parts. It's a page where I've put up the trust equation and why the different elements are important. And I have also put up some very specific bullet points, ideas about things that you can work on to improve trust in the relationship. So for each of these areas, so it's meant to be an idea, a takeaway. I should try these kinds of things, as well as explaining more about this, what the elements of trust are.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Really have enjoyed having you here today and learned a lot about trust. And I would not be surprised if you get some contact from this presentation. I'm sure we learned a lot. So I just really appreciate you being here today, Melissa.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, this is the end right now. And stay tuned for our next presenter. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.